Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, July 7th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Some vendors have resisted attempts by the Harare Municipal Police to evict them from the Central Business District.
Vendors flatly refused to leave, insisting that government must address the economic challenges in the country, must create employment, must resuscitate industry, so that when they leave, they have alternative places to go.
The family of human rights activist Itai Dzamara, who was abducted more than 3 months ago by unknown assailants, says it will convene an abandoned prayer meeting this Saturday in Harare.
We still holding on to the same belief that Itai Dzamara is still alive, and in fact, we are seeking for divine intervention.
And the eviction of illegal miners in Mashonaland Central Province, once begged by First Lady Grace Mugabe, raises fears of a humanitarian crisis.
This youth has been abused for almost 6 years now. It has become a trend. An average shaft means between 22 and 33 meters deep, and no proper mining conditions were being followed.
These stories and much, much more coming up. Some vendors have resisted attempts by the Harare Municipal Police to evict them from the Central Business District. Council officials tried in vain today to relocate them to vending sites that have been set up by the local authority. Our correspondent Thomas Chiripasi has more details from Harare.
Some municipal police today tried to destroy market stalls erected by vendors at Copacabana and urging the street traders to relocate to new vending sites that have been set up by the city council, a move that was resisted by the vendors. Promise Mkwananzi, programs coordinator of the Zimbabwe Informal Sector Organization, told Studio 7 that the actions of the municipal police were unjustified because council has not yet put up proper infrastructure at the newly designated vending sites.
About 50 police officers were milling around the city, initially trying to persuade people to leave their sites and trying to intimidate them to do so. But the vendors flatly refused to leave, insisting that government must address the economic challenges in the country, must create employment, must resuscitate industry, so that when they leave, they have alternative places to go.
Mkwananzi urged the council to ensure that all the street traders were accommodated in stores that have proper infrastructure and are moved after government has agreed with all stakeholders on proper ways of relocating vendors. He added that authorities should ensure that they create employment and put the country's economy back on track first before evicting the street vendors.
You can never totally eliminate the issue of vendors. It will always be there. The proliferation of vendors is an indication of a deep-seated economic crisis that must be arrested immediately by government and other stakeholders.
The board secretary of the National Vendors Union of Zimbabwe, Justice Manai, who also sells some wares in Harare street pavements, condemned the municipal police actions. He tells Studio 7 that removing vendors from the streets would have a negative impact on their lives as the economic downturn shows no signs of abating.
Our livelihoods emanate from the day-to-day sales we make in the streets. I go to Mbari every morning, I hold bananas, apples and the like, come into the CBD and sell those wares to passers-by and well-wishers. I make my living from that.
Harare Mayor Bernard Manyenyeni said his council's policy is that no vendor will be forcibly evicted from the city center.
As far as I know, our team that is trying to handle this, whether from a communication or from an operations perspective, have tried to handle it in a humane and professional fashion.
Meanwhile, the drama at Townhouse over the suspension of town clerk Tendai Mahachi continued today, with Manyenyeni giving him a 2-day ultimatum to submit his employment profile. This comes after Mahachi returned to resume his duties at Townhouse yesterday, less than a week after being sent on forced leave. The Harare mayor told a news conference that he would now engage the newly appointed Minister of Local Government, Xavier Kasukwere, over Mahachi's matter. But Kasukwere noted that he was still new in the ministry and would want to get an insight into the affairs of the Harare City Council before making any pronouncements. Mahachi was suspended for allegedly failing to give the city salary schedules for council executives. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
The family of human rights activist Itai Dzamara, who was abducted more than 3 months ago by unknown assailants, says it is finally convening an abandoned prayer meeting this Saturday at the Zimbabwe grounds in Highfield, Harare. Family spokesman Patson Dzamara says the event is being organized by Bishop Anselmo Magaya of Grace Ablaze Ministries International. The prayer meeting was abandoned last month following some disagreements between the Dzamara family and church leaders who were organizing the event. Police also declined to sanction the meeting, alleging that they had information that it had been hijacked by politicians. Patson Dzamara tells Studio 7 all Zimbabweans are free to attend the prayer meeting.
We are hosting a prayer on Saturday on the 11th, and this prayer is a prayer organized to pray to God for you guys so that whoever is holding in hostage by religion, we still holding on to the same belief that Itai Dzamara is still alive. And in fact, we are seeking for divine intervention because we know that the Bible says that wherever three or two are gathered in my name, there I shall be there in their midst. And you know God will respond and answer if we come together and pray. That is the reason why we are gathering.
Who is leading this prayer meeting?
We have Bishop Anselmo Magaya, who has been with us from the onset. We have decided to broaden our approach and our view of this. And so this is now a national process as it was. And so Bishop Anselmo Magaya will still continue to lead us, and he is going to be leading us on Saturday when we convene to meet and pray for Itai Dzamara and the Zimbabwe guys.
What can you say has changed from the previous planned prayer?
The conveners have pretty much changed. The learning curve for us, we didn't know certain things. And so as a result of that, we made some decisions that actually then spiraled into the wrong direction as it was. But now we have Bishop Magaya under his organization that is coming in as the convener.
That was Dzamara family spokesman Patson Dzamara in Harare with Studio 7.
The plight of illegal miners evicted from Kitsiatota mine near Bindura in Mashonaland Central Province was the subject of discussion at the just-ended International Africa Peace and Security Education Conference at Bindura University last Friday. The conference was backed by Bradford University and Frederick Ebert Stiftung. More than 3,000 illegal gold panners have been left stranded in Bindura after police forcibly evicted them 2 weeks ago, though First Lady Grace Mugabe and ZANU-PF Politburo member Opam Chinguru Gashiri assured them that their mining activities will be regularized. Mrs. Mugabe gave the assurance during her Meet the People tour last year, saying it was part of the government policy to empower the people. Kitsiatota is a rich piece of land where Zimbabweans were trying to eke out a living in a country that has an estimated unemployment rate of 90%. Sources at the mine say they also paid $200 each to form cooperatives and they have lost their investment.
Efforts to get a comment from Small and Medium Enterprises Minister Stembi Sonyoni were futile as she is reported to be visiting China together with the Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa. Bindura University lecturer Obadiah Dodo, who carried out a study in the mining area and presented a paper at the Peace Conference, tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu the situation at Kitsia Tota needs urgent attention.
A particular political party has been allowing these idle youth to move in a mine illegally in a dangerous manner. An average of 6 months before an election, the people they would be used, abused, and so on and so forth. And 6 months or so after the election, then they would be evicted violently using the riot police. But of interest, the recent eviction that involved about more than 3,000 youth. Literally, an average person was occupying 0.083 square meters, which is unacceptable looking at health and sanitation, from health and sanitation perspective. This youth has been abused for almost 6 times now. It has become a trend. We noted that an average, people in average, shaft has been between 22 and 33 meters deep, and no proper mining conditions were being followed, no safety measures were being put in place. They would get in using ropes. And during the last 8 months that they've been involved in this illegal mining, 60 fatal cases of accidents were recorded. Of concern is that out of the 3,000, the majority are still living around in Bindura. There is no basket to go back to their own places. There is no water, no accommodation, nothing. And this has become a critical case now.
But what are your recommendations? What can be done to stop this problem from escalating?
In my study, I recommended that first and foremost, there has to be an admission on the part of government. It has to acknowledge that there is unemployment. Currently, unemployment figures at plus or minus 90%, although central statistics argue that it's 11%, which is unrealistic anyway, because there's no industry that's functional. So, secondly, we have to define what real economic empowerment vis-a-vis the youth needs and come up with realistic measures of empowering these youth.
That was Obadiah Dodo, a lecturer in the Department of Peace and Security at the University of Bindura, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare. Meanwhile, the Zimbabwe Informal Sectors Organization also warned last Friday that a humanitarian crisis was looming following the forced eviction of miners at Kitsia Tota.
The Zimbabwe Farmers Union says a lot needs to be done to increase agricultural productivity in the country as concern increases over continuing low national agricultural yields. Zimbabwe, once viewed as Southern Africa's breadbasket, has to find $300 million to import food this year because of a massive drop in maize production blamed by many on the ruling party's agrarian reforms.
Deputy President Emmerson Mnangagwa recently said the government will do all it can to ensure that no one starves, with Agriculture Deputy Minister Paddy Zanda telling Parliament low production yields are a major concern to the government, which presently cannot subsidize farmers before production. Zimbabwe Farmers Union Director Paul Zakaria tells Studio 7 Sandra Nyaira low yields in the country, in particular maize yields, will continue unless farmers have access to loans and are paid on time for delivered produce.
To raise productivity in the nation, we really have to step up on our education and training programs. And we need to beef up our extension so that our extension is supportive of the initiatives of the farmers. And that's a we ensure that farmers do not lose out on the little that they put into agricultural production so that they receive value for whatever they are doing. Now, the other thing that we need to look at is the availability of inputs and inputs on time, and also affordability of the same inputs. These are very critical issues. And we need also to address the issue of finance for agriculture. Agriculture is an industry that cannot thrive, that cannot operate adequately and effectively without access to finance. And this means banks have to play their part. It means private sector have to play their part. We have to move away from, of course, these free handouts which are crippling initiative on the part of farmers.
Earlier on, you spoke about the need for farmers to access finance, and most farmers, like maize farmers, for example, have not been paid. If at all they had borrowed money to produce the maize yields they produced like last year, for example, how then do they, you know, continue to borrow when they cannot pay back? Is there anything that you are doing as the ZFU to ensure that, you know, the GMB pays farmers whose maize was delivered last year?
This is a problem that we have already started, you know, addressing. GMB should not come anywhere near farmers' produce if GMB does not have the money to pay for the produce.
That was Zimbabwe Farmers Union Director Paul Zakaria on the line from Harare with Studio 7 Sandra Nyaira.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metum Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up,
a fish project transforms the lives of some Zimbabweans.
And a youth organization says it's concerned about the high HIV rate among young people.
The community is getting an overview due to the fact that they are seeing now that the project can fetch money for them.
Stay tuned for more details.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
A gunman stormed a residential compound in northeastern Kenya on Tuesday and killed 14 people. Al-Shabaab militants have claimed responsibility for the shootings in Sokombuzi, a village located near Kenya's border with Somalia.
Greece is facing a critical moment today, with Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras trying to convince its 18 neighbors in the Eurozone to cut Athens' massive debt and hand it more bailout loans to keep the country from running out of cash and possibly exiting the currency bloc.
Pakistan officials confirm a high-level Afghan delegation held peace negotiations with leaders of the Taliban insurgents Tuesday in Islamabad.
Saudi Arabia said today authorities have arrested three brothers in connection with last month's suicide bombing at a mosque in Kuwait that killed 27 people.
And Pope Francis will spend the second day of his three-nation South American tour holding an open-air mass in Ecuador's capital of Quito Tuesday.
A fish project in Zimbabwe's Mashonaland and Western provinces has become a source of livelihood for local people, including hundreds of orphans. Our correspondent Arthur Chigoriwa has more details from Chinoy.
Give a man a fish and feed him for a day. Teach a man to fish and you feed him for a lifetime. So goes an English adage. Villagers in Mangura's Richmond area have been taught how to keep fish and are now reaping the benefits. They were not fed for a day, but imparted with the necessary skills to cater for their needs. It all started when a local organization, Pamoacha, donated 1,500 fish and feeding material to local people and showed them modern ways of conducting this type of farming. The project was set up at Richmond Primary School and first managed by teachers and the School Development Association before it being embraced by the whole community. A swimming pool once used by a white commercial farmer was converted into a fish pond. It has not all been rosy, as the villagers at first encountered several problems like limited fish farming knowledge. One of the fish farmers, Munjozi Wansompa, says they did not even have an idea on when to clean, empty and refill the fish pond.
We faced challenges on water, pumping of water in and out. We faced a very high challenge because the person who was assisting us with the pumping of water in the pond, he used his own source of water to assist us.
All this has almost been overcome as Rose Kachambra, a mother of four children, is among local people who say the fish project has transformed their lives.
This project is good for us. We can now get relish. And fish is nutritious.
Another beneficiary, Mushadei Garawaziva, a mother of three, says apart from eating fresh fish, most villagers are now thinking of having similar projects in their homesteads.
Aiwa, fish is fresh.
We eat fish when they are still fresh. I'm planning to have my own fish project at my homestead because I realize that it is easy to look after them.
Innocent Wachenuka, a teacher at Richmond Primary School who kick-started the project, says they are now paying fees for 26 children with money derived from selling fish.
Okay, this project is going to help disadvantaged people in the community, like my orphans. They're going to benefit in pay some school fees for the disadvantaged people in the community. And the community also going to buy fish for their relish.
Wanzomba says the fish project is growing every day.
The community is getting an overview due to the fact that they are seeing now that the project can actually bring something to their table, can fetch money for them, for their survival. So there are clubs within the community who are buying fingerlings from us. For example, already we've got one club at a certain area at Kaswa. We've bought about 1,000 fingerlings from us. So instead of selling big fish, we are now selling the fingerlings, which is an advantage to us.
He says they sell 5 palm-sized fish for $1 and 1,000 fish for $100.50. The villagers currently have 4 pools for conducting the business after only starting with one last year in May. Palmwacha director Precious Napi says they are happy that local communities are becoming self-reliant at a time when most Zimbabweans are struggling to make ends meet due to the current harsh economic environment in the country. Reporting for Studio 7 in Chinoi, this is Arthur Chigoriwa.
Say what? A student reproductive action team says it is worried about latest reports indicating that almost 80% of 100,000 youths living with HIV in Zimbabwe are girls. National AIDS Council Chief Operations Manager Tapua Magure told Parliament yesterday that several factors are causing this spike, including unsafe sexual practices. Jimmy Wilford, Director of Say What, tells Studio 7's Tatenda Gumbo his organization is currently analyzing these figures with a view of tackling the matter in a prudent way.
It could be because these young people were born HIV positive. And again, it can be attributed to other factors that might include issues to do with the limited information and these young people having a low risk perception. As a result, they become more vulnerable simply because they have low risk perception and they find themselves in circumstances and situations which can result in them having unprotected sex.
Are there any challenges alleviating this figure, making sure that all these teenagers who are HIV positive can access the ARVs and treatment that they need?
In terms of access to treatment, Zimbabwe is a country with limited resources, though they are doing their best. And there is a lot of treatment literacy taking place within communities because we are looking at young people. Say, for instance, we are looking at young people who were born HIV positive. The same young people who were born HIV positive, some of them got to know about it very late, about their HIV status. The parents were not even telling them. So at family level, again, a lot is being done within our communities to ensure that there is that total transformation at community level, at family level, so that when you know that this child was born HIV positive, let's also try to find some way of disclosing, let's begin some disclosure.
That was Jimmy Wilford, director of Say What, a student reproductive action team, speaking to Studio 7 Statenda Gumbo in Harare.
And now it's time for our mailbag with Runganu.
Hello, this is Runganu Kayo bringing you the Studio 7 mailbag. Here's what we have from our listeners. Office Lapana in Bire writes, "You people are splendid. Your coverage is just marvelous. Keep on the splendid job." Next, we have Stanley Shoko in Shangani Mine. "Good evening. Thanks for the good job." Last, we have Patron Goronga who writes, "Hi studio team, we are facing economic problems due to diabolic, corrupt, and inefficient government of ZANU-PF. Thank you for sending us your messages. Please continue to send them on our WhatsApp at the number 1-202-465-0318. Again, 1-202-465-0318. Visit us on our VOA Zimbabwe, VOA Shona, and VOA Ndebele Facebook pages. You can also send us an email at studio7@voanews.com.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our Youth Connection hosts will be talking with listeners and experts about reports indicating that over 100,000 youths in Zimbabwe are living with HIV.
To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you right back from our studios.
The music of Soul Brothers going out to you from Studio 7 here at the Voice of America in remembering the late band leader Deft Masondo.
Thanks, Junga. Now to recap today's top stories.
Some vendors have resisted attempts by the Harare Municipal Police to evict them from the Central Business District.
The family of human rights activist Itai Zamara, who was abducted more than 3 months ago by unknown assailants, says it will convene an abandoned prayer meeting this Saturday in Harare.
And the eviction of illegal miners in Mashonaland Central Province, once begged by First Lady Grace Mugabe, raises fears of a humanitarian crisis.
That's our broadcast this evening. My name is Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.
And now stand by for Studio 7 in Ntebele. This is Jonga Kandemi Irene.